Kyrie. Love it. Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com. This is your morning tradition, and welcome back. Mike and Lisa Austin here on your morning tradition, where we are
living our faith.
Our traditional Catholic faith. The liturgy, the hymns, the music that's so important during the liturgy. We're talking with Father Peter Scott via Skype from South Africa. We're talking a lot about Gregorian chant.
Right. And Father, can you expound more a little bit on the hymns and where it can be used and where it can't?
Hymns can be in English or vernacular, and they can be in the Latin language also. But depending on what part of the Mass we're talking about. And so they're also approved. They have a place, but they're not a part of the liturgical celebration itself because they cannot be used for the singing of the liturgical text. That has to be Gregorian chants.
I see.
And so consequently, you're going to have hymns in Latin at a high Mass in the offertory or a communion during Mass. And at a low Mass, you can have hymns even in the vernacular. And before Mass or during Mass, because at a low Mass there are no particular rules, and so you can sing hymns during the low Mass in the vernacular to encourage the piety and the devotion of the people during the celebration of a low Mass. That's not forbidden. But when you have a high Mass, then it has to follow the rules, which says what you can use and when you can use it. And you can only use Gregorian chant for the propers of the Mass, that is to say, for the introit, the gradual, the offertory, the communion chants, and those parts. And you can use Gregorian chant, or you can use the classical polyphony during the other times of the Mass to give the greater beauty to the ceremony and to lift the souls to God and give greater glory to God. Because we give glory to God by our voices and by the external celebration of the liturgy, just as we do by lifting our hearts to God, we're both body and soul.
At one point, this is, I guess, more of a historical note or a historical question. Is there a specific time we can say when, I picture in my head the apostles singing as the Mass developed, right? But at what point was it a formal choir put off to the side or up in a loft or somewhere? At what point did that come in?
Okay, so the origin of the church's music, it dates back to the Old Testament, because in the Old Testament they sang the Psalms, and they sang the Psalms in Hebrew, and that was their liturgical singing. Now, we don't have a direct connection with that, and we don't know exactly how Gregorian chant developed in the first centuries of the church, but in just as they had the singing of the Psalms, which are the basis of the liturgy, which developed from that, add to that the text of the New Testament and the text of the church, but the Psalms are the nucleus, the basis of it, then in the different rites of the church, the same, a similar chant style developed, which was to express in chant form the meaning of the text. In the Latin rite, this was the Gregorian chant. In the other rites, it has different names, called Gregorian chant after St. Gregory the Great, who lived in the 6th century. Not that he invented Gregorian chant, not at all. And it existed centuries before him. But he fixed it in its present form. And it started off very simple, with simple melodies, and they became more and more complex until we got to the stage where now in the Roman Rite, the Gregorian chants are actually much more complex than they are in the Eastern Rites. And in the Eastern Rites, the chants are much simpler. They don't have propers as we do, like the introit propers. They have the same chants every day at Mass. Everybody knows it by heart. Everybody sings in the liturgical language. It's much simpler. Whereas the Roman Rite, and that's one of the beauties of the Roman Rite, it developed the chant of the Gregorian chant and became very elaborate in the monasteries, which developed up, and so it became a little bit beyond the ability of most regular people. And that's how we start have an elaborate Gregorian chant, which developed, and the fact that the chant became then a place for the clergy and for the monks, but not for the regular people. And that's why at the end of the Middle Ages, the Gregorian chant fell into disuse in most parishes, even in most cathedrals and most places. And so that from about the 16th to the end of the 19th century, there was a real lack of appreciation of Gregorian chant, and it fell into disuse, was replaced often by the more theatrical modern music. And that's why St. Pius X had to bring about his reform. He was well qualified to do it because he had directed scholars himself. He knew how to sing himself. He knew all about the Gregorian chant, and he started to bring about this reform long before he was pope. And then become pope, it was the first reform he did before he reformed the priesthood or canon law or communion to the young people. First of all, he started with the chant because it was desperately in need of reform to try and bring back the ancient music of the church because it had been so little appreciated. And that was the whole point of this motu proprio. And it was beginning of this whole movement of restoration of Gregorian chant, which continued up until it came to a screeching halt at the Second Vatican Council, which did away with all of the Gregorian chant and all of the Latin and all of the beauty of the sacred liturgy. And we owe to Pope Pius XI and Pope Pius XII, they continued the work of St. Pius X and encouraged greatly not only the singing of the Gregorian chant, but also the singing of the Gregorian chant by the faithful. And because what St. Pius X did was to encourage the singing of the Gregorian chant by the clergy, as in the monasteries. And the reform of the liturgical books, and so that the all of the liturgical books had to be republished with the correct writing out of the Gregorian notation, which was done by the Abbey of Solesmes in France at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th centuries, through to the 1950s, that work continued. And then after that, it was established in all cathedrals and in all places of formation and seminaries, then in parishes. Pope Pius X already asked for the faithful to be introduced into congregational singing, that they themselves would sing the chant. But it didn't happen too much in his time, and it was actually Pope Pius XII who wrote an encyclical on the liturgy in 1947 called Mediator Dei. And in that encyclical, he encouraged the people to sing. And I would just like to read this little passage from the encyclical because it points out the mind of the church. We exhort you, venerable brethren, to promote with care congregational singing, and to see as to its accurate execution with all due dignity, since it easily stirs up and arouses the faith and piety of large gatherings of the faithful. Let the full harmonious singing of our people rise to heaven like the bursting of a thunderous sea, and let them testify by the melody of their song to the unity of their hearts and minds as becomes brothers and children of the same Father. That's Pope Pius XII.
That's and then you beautiful. Can see
the mystical side of it. And although he says he's not excluding modern music and singing, he wants the people trained to sing. Now, here in Africa, that's what I do. The people love to sing in Africa.
Yes.
All Africans love to sing. And so it's not difficult. They don't have the same hang-ups as the Anglo-Saxons got hang-ups about singing. and they feel as if it's something that it's just not proper to do. They just sing. It's spontaneous. And so before or after Mass on Sunday, when we go to the townships to Sweta, we give them a Gregorian chant class. And they all sing the ordinary, the Mass, the Kyrie, the Kyrie, the Gloria, the Sanctus Agnus Dei, Ite Missa Est. They all sing it. Not all so well, but they all sing it.
Right. I would love to have that.
I'd love to hear that. I really would.
What you'd love to hear is their Zulu hymns. They sing those in parts, and they are very beautiful. And they sing Zulu hymns. It's a part of their life. They sing. And this culture that they have is a culture. Now, it's not properly speaking liturgical, but, you know, we allow them to sing these Zulu hymns because it's so much a part of their life. And they put their whole gusto and their heart into it, and it lifts their souls to God. And you can see it makes them so happy to be singing. And it's so much a part of them. and they sing in parts. Just like that. They don't have music. They don't need music. They just sing in parts.
I must say, I'm getting a vision in my mind, because when we were talking to Father Jenkins to introduce him, we up in Nigeria, we looked on YouTube for
Nigerian music.
Nigerian children's choir, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And there's this video of, like, must be 20, 30 children walking a path, all singing in what sounds like exact perfect harmony. It is breathtaking. And that must be what you're describing.
It's African sing. They love to sing. Yeah. And they have a good ear in general, and they're not so used to the movement of Gregorian chants. And so we have to try and train them because Gregorian chant has got a free rhythm, so it rises and it falls, arses and thesis. As you go up, then it goes quicker, then it comes down. And you've got to have that pause, that calm down. Then it rises up again to get the movement of the chant, which symbolizes the movement of the soul rising up to God and then coming down to this earth.
I would love a class like that.
That is beautiful. I'd never thought of it so deeply. And I think if more people heard that, well, hopefully they'll hear this and hear what your words are.
And talk get them to their priests about it and get classes going.
Think a little. We should have classes on Gregorian chant.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of a class on Gregorian chant. But
It's not a difficult thing to do, but the people have to be willing to sing. And I've never succeeded in doing that with Anglo-Saxons, I'm sorry.
That's too bad.
Well, if you ever make
Europeans
it...
The Europeans sing. The French sing, the Italians sing, the Spaniards sing, but Anglo-Saxons have a real hang-up when it comes to singing, and they think it's just for professionals. I think it's due to 7 centuries of persecution in Ireland, and the fact that they had to go underground and had their mass rocks, and they were totally persecuted. They weren't able to manifest their faith in any way, so that there is a certain lack of appreciation for music. But the Irish love to sing, but not at the mass. But they sing beautifully.
Right.
But there's a bit of a problem here, because I think it's all those centuries of persecution, whereas it's a Catholic culture to sing.
Yes.
And it's natural, and it lifts the soul to God. And that's why we need to encourage people to sing the good chant. Why do you think people go for rock music or jazz or modern music? Because they don't know anything else, and we need music.
Yes.
And so they go for the only thing they can find. They don't understand anything else, and it's easy to get into, whereas a Gregorian chant, it's not so easy. It takes an effort. And like anything good, you have to put effort into it to get something out of it.
True.
Yes.
That is so true.
It's not so difficult to sing as modern music, which is in parts, because then it's very difficult to sing in parts for a lot of people. But when it's all the same note, it's not that difficult.
Yeah, I will say this. I've written a few jingles for radio and things like that. And it's in modern music falls in the same way. As I said, it does speak to a lower nature, modern music, in that we always say with a jingle to get it stuck in someone's head, same way with a hit song, rhyme, rhythm, repetition. That's what.
Right.
That's all it is. And
right.
Gregorian chant, as you said, lifts that spirit up. That was a beautiful, beautiful words. I love that. Father Peter Scott in South Africa, it's been a pleasure as always, and we hope we can do this again soon. And I'm going to look at liturgical music and Gregorian chant in a whole different light now.
Are you going to sing now too?
No, you don't want me singing. Really, trust me. You really don't want me singing. Father, thank you so much for your time, and God bless.
God bless, Mike, and nice talking with you again.
Father Peter Scott, always a good addition to the show.
Mm-hmm. He's awesome. Doing well in South Africa.
Yep. It's your Thursday. It's weekend eve. We're going to take a break and come back. I'm going to tell you to eat more garlic, but there's a reason why. Not for your breath. Oh, not for your breath.
No. I know it's good for your health. You're going to tell us more about why?
More about why it's good for your health. That and a couple of other things that you should be doing this time of year as we're just sort of between the warm and cold times of the year, so... Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com. It's your morning tradition. We'll be back. This is where we are.
Living our faith.
Back at it again. As we start to close out the morning with you, Mike and Lisa Austin on Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com. It's your morning tradition. Where we are.
Living our faith.
That's good to hear from Father Peter Scott.
Yes, it was.
It's always good to hear his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always good to have Stephen Cox on. Tomorrow, Stephen Cox, of course, with Church and State several times throughout the day.
We'll talk
about that. Today, it's Louis Tafari Day. Louis is going to be on with learning about the Roman liturgy several times throughout the day. Lisa, those times are?
10 a.m., 1 p.m., 6:30 p.m., and 10 p.m. And on Saturdays at 10 o'clock in the morning.
10 a.m. The Central Time U.S. Always remember that these are Central Time U.S. These times. So adjust accordingly. And then we're archiving more. I think the show with Mr. Garrison is archived now, the other day.
Okay.
A talk he gave. And let's see, Church and State goes up on YouTube, our YouTube channel. And I believe Louis Tafari does as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, as far as I know.
Eat some garlic. Yeah, eat some garlic.
I know garlic is supposed to be good for you.
Garlic's very good for you. There are ways to boost your natural immune system. God gave us such a machine here.
He did.
We have, and I don't think people, well, of course, people don't stop to think about God at all today. But when you really ponder the complexity of your body.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing an experiment for the kids the other day. They had an experiment in one of their books where you had to make a simple machine out of a couple of spools and a rubber band.
Yes.
And measure the, you know, we put a dot on them and measure the different size spools. How does it turn differently, the speed? And I showed them under the hood of the van, the serpentine belt and how it's connected to all these little machines inside and how it all works.
Right.
And I said, your body is kind of the same way. It's a machine. All these different systems rely on each other.
Uh-huh.
And we got talking about that outside. It was a very interesting little conversation. Short, brief, but still one of those moments where you just stop to ponder the nuances. Your eyes. How do we take light and shape, and it comes? I know we know scientifically how it's done.
Right.
But God knew all that before we even started.
Yes, exactly.
It blows you away.
And then talk about reproduction.
Oh, please, the miracle of birth.
Oh, yes.
It's amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was
everything
a few years ago on public TV, which some things on public TV are okay. And it was a documentary, and it followed a baby's development from conception to birth.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that?
I don't think I did.
This was back in like the 80s, I think, late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But you saw the miracle happen in front of you.
That would be amazing.
Well, and here it is. Here you go again. You think, okay, even secular people saw that. It was on public television.
Right.
You would think that would change some hearts and minds. And maybe it did. I don't want to say it didn't, but...
Right. Start contemplating about God and...
Abortion.
Life. Abortion,
you'd think it would change that completely, but it hasn't. But anyway. So let's get back to the eating garlic. These are some three ways you boost naturally your immune system. Eat more garlic. Garlic I like to a certain extent. It's a great flavor. University of Maryland Medical Center, they say it helps prevent heart disease. It's like a natural blood
thinner,
so to speak. Blend together pesto with raw garlic and throw it over pasta or bread.
Oh, I love pesto and garlic.
Let's see. Homemade immunity shot. They call this a homemade immunity shot.
Uh-huh. Are
you ready?
Yeah.
Raw garlic.
Yes.
Ginger, which I hate.
Uh-huh.
Carrots and lemon. You grind that up in like one of the ninja or something.
And you drink it?
You could either eat it on like a cracker or something. Depends how thick it is.
I see.
Here's another one. Well, like the regular.
I like that.
Yeah. Regular sleep. Regular sleep is a big one for your immune system, I guess.
Oh, well, then maybe.
Yeah.
Sleep. That's it then.
Oh,
that's
sleep.
What. Okay.
Because when you're in that sleep state, that deep REM sleep.
Yeah.
Your body goes through and does maintenance.
That's how it repairs itself, really. Yes, that's true.
There's little tiny men that go and they travel through your bloodstream in little tiny spaceships.
So we really need to work on our time management, don't we, Mike?
Yeah. Here's one. This one doesn't sound too bad, except for the ginger. Drink lemon, honey, ginger, and turmeric dissolved in warm water.
I don't know if that would taste so well.
It doesn't sound like it, does it?
Uh-uh.
A lot of people swear by this, they say.
But if it works.
A remedy for colds. Does the magic elixir actually work, or is it just an old wives' tale? The research on each individual ingredient looks pretty promising. From the Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine Foundation or something. Holy cow. Put that on your business card. There. This is my business card.
Well, I like those ideas.
They found that honey as an antioxidant acts as a natural immunity booster. Ginger, another powerful antioxidant and antiviral properties in it. That's ginger.
Ginger has antiviral?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good to know.
And can be used to treat digestive woes. I never heard a doctor diagnose you with digestive woes, but okay. You got digestive woes. Whoa. Lemon juice is high, of course, in vitamin C. The Mayo Clinic says it can be used for its antioxidant properties. Lastly, studies show that curcumin?
Cuminin?
C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. A component in the spice called turmeric can regulate the immune system.
It's cuminin. I know how it's spelled, but it's...
Okay.
I think it's a misspelling.
Take your drink, your lemon, your ginger, your honey, and your turmeric, dissolve it in warm water, guzzle that baby, and try not to make a face. They say that's going to be good for you.
Boost your immune system.
See, so you got not only music in the church and our good friend Father Peter Scott, you got a little bit of news, you got the stuff from Stephen Cox there, and...
And a healthy cocktail.
And you got a healthy cocktail at the end here from the Magnificat Lounge. All right. That's going to just about do it for us. In fact, that will do it for us. We're going to have to get out of the way. We're going to make room for the rest of your day.
Boldly, everybody. Live your faith well. Be good examples. Try to be.
Wow, you're so motherly. I love it. It's nice.
We're coming on to the weekend, so let's try to do our best.
All right. Louis Tafari throughout your day. Praise be Jesus and Mary.
Now and forever.
And those hills lush and green were a part of my dreams when I dreamed of my calling.